Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Our lines are now open. Call Dean Mackin now. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Oh, it is. It's alive and well, but it only remains that way if you spread the word. If you don't tell your friends, you're going to use it or lose it. It'll atrophy, so make sure after the program has finished or during it, when you get home, when you're doing whatever, what you have to do is text a friend, get somebody involved, get people listening to myself, to Chris Smith, to Katie Hopkins, and everybody else that you hear across the TNT radio station, and you're absolutely going to be assured that we're going to be around for a long time. But if you don't do that, we may not be. So it's up to you. If you're loving it, then appreciate and pay back by telling a friend. It's that easy. Thank you, Chris Smith. And damn you to hell, he makes it so interesting. I had another probably 10 minutes of prep to do, and I was listening to his tech program and the 3D screen. It sounds absolutely wonderful. It sounds really good. And if you've never used a 3D device, like let's say a VR headset, it is surreal. It honestly, I promise you, it is surreal. For example, a flight simulator, a racing car game, you forget you are sitting on a chair in your bedroom and you think that you're flying in a Cessna over top of New York or under the Harbour Bridge. You literally do. You can look around. You can look in the back seat. You can look across your left shoulder down the wing as you bank to the left and look down on the top of the buildings. It is absolutely wonderful. And where does it all end? They've got this thing called 4DX Cinema. And you go there, not only is it 3D, but the seats move. So if there's a car chase, for example, and the car goes off a cliff, the seats will move to mimic probably not accurately what happens if a car goes off a cliff. If it's raining, they'll spray some stuff on your face. And if there's a particularly bad smell, they'll spray some sort of odor into the room and simulate that. It's very engaging. It's very engaging. Hopefully they don't ever start playing porn movies there. That would be, I'd just opt out of that. That probably wouldn't be good. But 4DX cinema is great. 3D screens are good. It is the way of the future. I've got messages coming through Facebook as well. And by the way, Mike Ryan, you are dearly missed. I've got a message here from Robert Griffin. Glad to hear TNT is growing. I'm loving hearing from you and all of the other presenters, but we miss Mike. We love Mike. Please give him my regards and thank you so much for the reply. God bless you all. Everyone loving Mike, myself included. I've got one here from Ron. Great show today, Dean, about this modern technology. Tap and go accuses fees. Banks are making $6 billion a year in Australia alone using this technology. Insert a card, put in the number, no extra charges. All that money comes straight out and away. Tap and go takes a few days for funds to come out. And I am paraphrasing part of this. This is what I have found over the last couple of years. And thank you for that, Ron. So, Ron, obviously, I mean, I like tap and go. I like the convenience of tap and go, but I like cash. And again, I'll say it again. I'm going to keep saying it ad infinitum. Keep using it. Even though I know it's great, I don't typically, not always, I'll be honest, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I go out, I don't take a wallet. I don't even take my cards. I just take my phone. It's got my driver's license on it. It's got all my cards and I can do pretty much whatever I want. But occasionally, and I'm doing it more and more often because as I tell you, I become more aware of the fact that I can't be a hypocrite. So I go into the safe and I grab a couple of $100, put it in my pocket. And for most things, for things that I can claim on tax, I don't, you know, fuel and whatever, I need a record of it. I need to know how much I paid when, and it's good to do that. But for things, you're going to a shop, you're buying a burger and whatnot, I think it's very clever to use cash, and they'll use cash. It'll come back. And when the lights go out, and they will in due course due to this green push from the above, and when it goes out, you'll be covered. You'll be the only one who is. Get your Tesla battery for your house too, I think might be a very good idea. Speaking of messages, I had one and I couldn't find it, but the gist of it was some fellow had a crack at me for having a crack at Liam Bartlett from 60 Minutes, who I said threw all of his toys out of the cot because he lost it, and he didn't do himself any favours when talking to who I would hope would be vice presidential hopeful. I don't know if she will be. I'd love it to be the case. Carrie Lake, because she has recently been interviewed by Liam Bartlett of 60 Minutes, and it was embarrassing. As an Australian, I was embarrassed. The staff of 60 Minutes and Channel 9 should be embarrassed, and they caught it all on camera. So she's had a couple of court cases challenging the results of the election that she lost, and it was very close. I mean, it was suspiciously close, if you know what I'm saying. And she challenged the results. I think she was very clever to go and do that. But the problem is she lost. She lost. No surprises there. But this fellow said, well, maybe she's the one who is deranged. Not that I ever called Liam Bartlett deranged. I didn't. I didn't say anything of the sort. But the simple fact is, I don't think it occurred to this particular individual that it may indeed be the judicial system that is that is absolutely nuts, that is bought and paid for. And if you got all your ducks in a row, all your white ants in the woodwork, you can get the result you want, can't you? That is the problem with courts. And I'm not saying it was the case there, but it might be. I don't know. We'll never know. Most of the time, I don't think we'll ever know. But anyway, Liam Bartlett, I wonder if he's learned anything from that. I would hope that that is the case, but we'll find out one day, I guess. At TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. And I'll tell you what, we also have you covered right here, right across TNT Radio.
Looping you in on the latest.
Alert straight to my phone.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, and if you'd like to call, you can, 1-800-670-310. But if not, I've got plenty, absolutely plenty that we can talk about. Now, Ron DeSantis. Now, did I not say last week, did I not say that the new mainstream media for conservatives, which is everybody who has intelligence, more than a double-digit IQ, I would say, substantially more is usually the case, and we're intuitive. I can say we because it's pretty much everyone listening, with the exception of possibly a couple of trolls. But yeah, we are the new audience of the mainstream news, which is now online, and Twitter is the place to be. So when Ron DeSantis is going to imminently tell us all what we already knew, or what a lot of us already suspected, that he will be running for president at the next election in the US against Donald Trump. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, if I was in the States, I think I'd go DeSantis. I really would, except for a couple of suspect things he's done of late, but certainly no more suspect than anything Donald Trump has done. None of them are quite as conservative as I would like, with the exception of maybe Senator Ron Paul and his son Rand Paul. They'd be my picks because I just think they're terrific. But in lieu of them not being available for that role or not running, and certainly Ron Paul not running again, he's retired now. I think he's still alive. I'm pretty sure I should have Googled that before I started, but his son is certainly doing wonders and taking it to the likes of Anthony Fauci. But I digress. The point being that anytime there's a major announcement by conservatives now, they're not going to get a CNN. They're certainly not going to go to Fox News. Sorry, Rupert, after what they did to the likes of Tucker Carlson, what I suspect they did to Dan Bongino. He said it was amicable. He said he left because they couldn't reach terms, which means they didn't want to pay him what he was worth. And I strongly suspect he was asking for an adequate amount, for an amount that was appropriate. I don't think that he was probably asking for too much. He seems very grounded and very realistic, Dan Bongino. But he was very calm, and he did say that we've parted ways, the timing of which is just crazy, because you've got people, again, as we mentioned yesterday, like the ex-Project Veritas guy, who is now has video footage of a senior person at Fox News who was letting us know that part of the Dominion voting settlement was to get rid of the likes of Tucker Carlson. So I really wonder what's happening in regards there. But it's looking very suspect, and we've got to get to a break very soon. But we'd like to say Dr. William McBay, He was arrested yesterday. Now, if you don't know Dr. William McBray, he rocked up at a medical, I think it was a medical board meeting, might have been an ARPA thing, I don't know, and they wouldn't let him talk. So he just got up and yelled, because that's what you have to do when they won't let you take the podium. He got up and he ranted. He spoke very well. He expressed his extreme concerns in regards to the vaccinations and the mandates and whatnot, and subsequently has been struck off. He no longer has a medical license. Well, he was outside ARPA headquarters yesterday with a megaphone, and the police came and they took him away. He was arrested, and there was video online of him coming out of the police station that they took him to, and a bunch of his fans applauding him as he came out. And he should be applauded, that fellow. I got his phone number yesterday from Graham Hood, my producer. Is contacting him as we speak. And if we can get him on very soon, I promise you we'll do that. And that's what we do here at TNT Radio. We talk to the people that matter, the people that talk the truth, the people who put their livelihoods on the line just so you can lead a better life. We'll be back after this. You're listening to TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
How the hell did we get here? How did we here on so many levels, Judge? So many levels.
You know, when you talk to people from other countries, see, they talk about, you know, when a country reverts to socialism, like Venezuela or some of the Eastern Bloc countries in Europe, that it happens very quickly. That once the military and the intelligence agencies are in, it's over. And when 51 intelligence agents, heads of the CIA, deputy directors, agreed that they were going to put together disinformation or a total lie with the intentions of providing Joe Biden with the ability to make some points at a presidential debate. I call that election interference. The border is being surged upon with Title 42 being dropped. We had 5 million illegals in the last 2 years. I suspect it'll be 10 million over the next two. And, 2 years ago, if you said they were invading the border or searching the border, you know, we were told we were racist and xenophobes. And now it's the truth.
Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.
1 in 4 people in Northern Ireland will be affected by depression in their lifetime. In fact, Northern Ireland has the highest rate of depression in the UK. Despite this, there's still a stigma attached to talking about it and mental illness in general. At Aware, we're trying to change that. Our story began in 1996 in Derry, Londonderry, when a small group of people came together with a shared vision to improve services for people with depression and bipolar disorder. This meeting led to the establishment of 25 peer-led support groups and the start of Aware, the depression charity for Northern Ireland. Providing support is at the heart of what we do. And we involve people with personal experience of depression at every level in the organisation, so that those who use our services have a say in how they're developed. We believe that talking to others who know how you feel is an important step in your journey to recovery. We've developed a range of education programmes, which we deliver in schools, universities, community venues, prisons, hospitals and workplaces. These programmes provide attendees with the tools to look after their mental and emotional well-being and help them to recognise the signs of mental ill health and know where to get help. We have a range of online services, including online support groups and programmes, and an interactive website offering support and information. We've been raising the profile of mental health and increasing public awareness about depression through our public talks and outreach events. We work in partnership with local government and voluntary organisations to maximise our impact. Back when we founded Aware, depression was an illness talked about in whispers. A lot has changed since then, and we're having a real impact by breaking down the stigma. But we still have work to do. Aware's vision is a future where nobody is too ashamed to talk about their mental health. And we believe that everyone in Northern Ireland should have access to services appropriate to their needs. Join us. Donate, volunteer, campaign, or even just start a conversation about mental health today. Together, we can overcome depression and change lives.
Visit aware-ni.org. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk. TNT Radio. TNT Radio.
And welcome back to the program. A bunch of in fact, it was massive, the amount of feedback I got on social media last night. Most of it came in while the program was on, but I can only fit so many windows that are open on this computer screen, and it's a huge computer screen. It's like sitting at the drive-in, and still I can't fit another window on. In regards to a couple of radio legends that we had on yesterday, if you are in Australia, you'll be absolutely no stranger to the likes of Jim Ball and to Ian McRae, and they were on Chris and myself's program yesterday, respectively, and people just loving it, absolutely loving Jim Ball and loving Ian McRae. My next guest, his name is Kai Mather, and studied law at the University of Cologne in Germany, is co-head of African and Asian Academics Foundation in Cologne, and it supports students in Ghana, has been very, very busy of late, and will tell us about it imminently. G'day, Kai. How are you?
Well, good afternoon to you, Dean. Good morning from Germany. It's still quite early here. I only got back from Plön in the north of Germany, where the trial of Bhakti took place a couple hours ago. And I should have been here way earlier, but the Deutsche Bahn, the German Railway Corporation, of course, they were delayed a couple hours. That's the perfect allegory for the justice system, which is also, it used to be great. It's not anymore. However, the judge yesterday, he almost restored a little bit of faith in the justice system. He was running a good procedure.
Mate, that's fantastic to hear that big win. I've been a fan of his for a long time, and he was one of the people who, back in the very early days, before most people dare speak out during the pandemic, was quite vocal. I mean, they're getting pretty desperate to shut him down when there's this much overreach, and now they're that preoccupied with what he's saying about, you know, let's say the virus, the vaccines and whatnot, that they're trying to bring anti-Semitism and other things into it, which are just completely ludicrous.
Yes, and the irony of the situation is that yesterday the whole court, 20 to 25 representatives of the German mainstream media, had to listen for 19 minutes, 1.5 hour of Susharit Bhakti explaining the danger of the vaccine. Since that was one piece of evidence, one video that was filmed in 2022, it was called Living Hell on Earth due to the vaccines. And that what the prosecution used to charge Susharit Bhakti on. But here's the thing, the defense had to point out that the prosecution did not even watch the whole video. They took it completely out of context. They used only snippets from it that they saw on Twitter pretty much. They never took the time in 1 year to look 90 minutes of video. And now the whole court had to watch it together with the audience. And it was a great moment listening to Professor Bhakti explain the dangers of the vaccine. I was looking at the judge. He was thinking about what he was hearing. Of course, I cannot read his mind, but I was assuming, well, maybe it gets him to think a little bit, maybe like, oh, damn, I'm triple vax. That sounds dangerous. Or maybe he's just completely, in the mainstream narrative, which is also fine because he was not biased. He was really leading a fair trial.
Yeah. The thing that I like so much about him is that he is so well spoken. He is so well versed in the things that he speaks of. And he oozes intelligence. You know, when you just read somebody and you just know, you can read their approximate intelligence, he is off the scale. And here they are going after him in Germany. And of course, a native of, I do believe, Thailand, he had a lot to do with the Thai royal family recently after the Thai princess went into a coma shortly after having a vaccine. He's been very vocal over in Thailand. He's had the ear of the royal family and some senior members of government. I wonder what's happening over there. I'd love to think that there's going to be something happening over there.
Well, I mean, he might face a trial in Thailand as well, or at least accusation and charges. I'm not completely sure where the proceeding stands right now, but he gave an interview a couple months ago about the Thai princess, and that wasn't well received in the in the Thai royalty. So he might be facing charges there as well. However, for yesterday's trial, we can happily report that he was acquitted, and it was a full acquittal of all charges.
And of course, he was somebody that was very prominent in not just in Germany, in fact, but around the world. You know, a lot of people referring to him as a skeptic and leading the charge when it came to informing people. He's a retired teaching doctor too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he is a professor of medicine, and he had been teaching medicine for a long time. He even mentioned about his teaching, saying that some of his colleagues are too old to have learned certain developments in the world of medicine. You know, that they're injecting people, but they do not understand the technology behind it. And so that's really something he also spoke about in the 90-minute video. Sushrut Bhakti, like you said, he is well-spoken. He's able to explain. He's able to teach people. So he can really break down that mRNA technology and explain the danger of it to people. He is also a Buddhist, and he's a very laid-back, relaxed soul. He is... he was not afraid of being sentenced yesterday. He stated that in court yesterday when I was talking to him, and he said, "No, I'm not brave. I'm not afraid. I'm you know, I just have to speak about these things because it is important."
Yeah, and I think people need to sit down. Those who have had a jab or two or more have to have a look into people such as him. And the reason being, why would somebody who is so well-liked, so well-respected, with so many credentials, put everything, including his own freedom, his reputation, on the line to tell you these type of things? There is no financial incentive for him to do so. The only logical reason for him to say the things that he is saying is an attack of conscience, his high morals, that he has your interests in front of his own.
Yes, exactly. And he is convinced of what he is saying. And he's also stating that he's a scientist, which means he would be fine to realize that he's wrong. He just wants to live up to the standard of scientific discourse and really argue the case. Also, the financial topics came up in court when he was asked how much money he made with the book, the two books that he wrote about the vaccinations. And that it really isn't a lot. Anyone who has written a book knows that. And he said he's not in it for the money. He even faced, like, the prosecution wanted to charge him 17,000 euros, which would have meant that he, you know, he kind of would be considered as a criminal after that high of a fee. And he would then lose his professor title, which might then lead to him losing his pension. So the prosecution really threatened his livelihood. However, the support of the people was enormous. There was, I think, 200 to 400 people. It's hard to estimate, you know, however the media always plays it down and then some other people play it up. But I would say at least 300 people in front of the court. They were singing, they had signs, they were just cheering him when they saw him on the window. So there was lots of emotional support for Sushrut. And I think people were, you know, it meant something to them personally when they saw him walking out of the court as a free man.
Yeah, I think that reaction would have been worldwide. I was watching some of the emails back and forth between yourself and my producer when you'd only just learned that he had been set free, and it made me immensely happy. And I'm guessing anybody who is aware of him will absolutely be agreeing.
Yes, of course, of course. And there were so many, I mean, for the defense team, it was really the question, can they trust the judge in really evaluating the questions of law here the right way? And they had filed motions against the prosecution and the judge for bias, but then the judge made clear very early on that he had doubts that this this charge of the prosecution, the merits were thin, and he expressed early in the case that he had doubts that this is enough to sentence Sushrut. So the defense team was able to later withdraw their motion for bias, and that would allow for a verdict. And there was a kind of a suspenseful moment when we were in court. Can we trust this judge? Is he not playing a game? Is there nothing agreed upon behind the scenes? So the motions were withdrawn, and then it turned out to be the right decision to allow for a verdict on that day.
Well, you've answered my next question, which was it down to just a single judge, or was there a jury of his peers there? And it did come down to that one judge. And again, one would expect that there might be some level of bias, because if you've had three jabs, I think was the case with this particular judge, as you said, I mean, you wouldn't want to believe what he says. Even if you did, you would not want to believe it, because it would be of great concern to yourself for your own medical well-being.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, I would say the biggest concern was the lady from the prosecution. She's a senior prosecutor of the state of Schleswig-Holstein, which is the county that was in. And so she is also a commissioner for anti-Semitism on top of her job as a prosecutor. And she just didn't do the job pretty much. I mean, the claims were thin. She didn't put the work in. But she was still very aggressive and emotional about it. She was kind of, causing more disturbance to the public peace than they charged him with. And you have to know about the German system. The prosecution is still bound by instructions of the ministry in the end. You know, there's a hierarchy in the prosecution system. And this is something that has been discussed among scholars in the press, because it leads to the fact that a German arrest warrant will not be executed on a European level. Because, for all it's worth, the EU, I disagree with almost anything they do, but at least they keep up still a certain rule of law. And that means prosecution should not be bound and have a link to politics. So this lady from the prosecution, Füssinger, she was really going aggressively. And in her final statement, it was almost like she wrote it a week ago for a completely different case. She did not address anything that the defense had brought up. And the defender, Sven Lausen, he put it beautifully. He said, this case had been, discontinued, terminated before, and then you opened it up again, you made it political, and now you lost. And it was just, it was a nice comeback story after a month of prosecution to finally, I dare to say, put her in her place and get this trial over with.
It's certainly an outcome that many of us will be over the moon about. Mate, I've run out of time. Kai Mather, I very much appreciate your time this afternoon, and I'd love to talk to you again if we can in the future. We do need to get to a commercial break. You're listening to TNT Radio. Back with more after this.
We interrupt this program.
Here we go.
This is huge, huge, huge news.
Huge, huge,
huge news.
Huge.
You need to listen to this.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. A 19-year-old man has been accused of threatening to kill US President Joe Biden following an alleged security scare outside the White House. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has warned the war in Ukraine cannot be won on the battlefield. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is expected to announce his 2024 presidential run in a live Twitter Spaces interview with Elon Musk on Wednesday evening.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
Well, it's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to the program. I've got a bunch of great guests this afternoon, and I'll tell you about a couple coming up a little bit later. I'm going to be talking to Father Tony Percy, who's based down in the ACT, about the compulsory acquisition of a hospital that they're running down there. And they had a long-term lease. The government, of course, is going to renege on that, and he's going to fight it. And I hope we will, as a group, be fighting that as well. I've got a guy who is holed up in the Ukraine. He can't go out, hasn't been able to go out for a year now, and it's in an occupied part of the Ukraine. So we're going to call him Mr. Winter. Doesn't want to give out his real name. Certainly not a great place to be if you're an American at the moment. Hold up. So we'll talk to him and find out what life is like over there. But right now we've got Warwick Marsh. He has been married to his wife, Alison, for 47 years. They've got 5 kids, 9 grandkids, and they live in Wollongong. He's a family man. He is a family man. He's got faith and a prayer advocate as well, social reformer, musician, TV producer, writer, and public speaker. He's a good guy too from everyone, and I know 3 people that know him, and they've all said he's absolutely wonderful. It is my pleasure to be talking to him this afternoon. And by the way, he is the guy who runs with his wife the Dads for Kids and the Canberra Declaration, 2 big things I almost missed out. G'day, Warwick. How are you?
How you going, Dean? Don't believe everything anyone tells you.
I don't, but I believe that. you see, already you sound like a good bloke. Anyone that tells you don't believe that, you know you should. It's just common sense. Now, Warwick, mate, you've been married for 47 years. You're doing well. You've got a bunch of kids, a bunch of grandkids. You're a top fella, and somehow still you've got time to run Dads for Kids. Tell us about the organisation.
Well, look, thanks for asking. And listen, it's a great pleasure to be on the call with you today and on radio. TNT, just tell me one thing before we go any further. How far does TNT go?
It goes around the world because we're online. And the best part is, mate, we are picking up. For someone down in Canberra, we've got the likes of Chris Smith on in the afternoon. I've come from 2SM. So now we're doing this Australian drive format in the afternoons here, even though we are going around the world. And technically I'm doing brekkie in the UK now. After me comes on Katie Hopkins. So we've got 3 absolutely, or 2 massive names. I'm not going to say I'm a massive name, but I will be by being in the middle of those 2. And, mate, we're just getting out there. We're building a massive audience, and we're talking to all the best people. And that's why radio online is now the place to be, unlike a terrestrial antenna. And we're finding that out. Ron DeSantis, of course, announcing his run for presidency, not through the mainstream media, but going onto Twitter. He's doing it online. It is now where conservatives go. It's the only place we can be.
Yeah, look, it's amazing. And again, I've heard of TNT, so it's a great honor. So you asked me about Dads for Kids, Dean. Dads for Kids, you know, your wound becomes your ministry, wounded healer. You've heard that line before, I'm sure.
Yes.
So I grew up in a broken home, and it sure doesn't feel good if you're a kid growing up in that situation.
No.
Great mum, great dad, they couldn't get on. And so had this father wound. An Aboriginal man said to me one day in the parliament, he said to a group of people, he said, the greatest need in Australia is for fathers, and fathers who love their kids, fathers who love their wives, and fathers who will make a difference to the community. And Dads for Kids was born out of those tears, born out of that message. And here we are now, 21 years later, still encouraging dads to be great dads, running courses, running TV ads. You might have seen their ads on TV, which we run through as CSA. So we're definitely out there and having a go, Dean.
It is, mate, probably the best thing I've ever done in my life. The thing I am proudest of is being a dad. And can I just say this, and I'm sure you'd agree, I've got mates and plenty of people possibly listening who are at that age, if you're a male, you know, mate, or a female, of course, too. You're at that age where if you leave it too much longer, it's probably not practical to be a parent. And I would suggest that somehow, any way you have to do it, you become a parent. It is just absolutely life-changing. It gives your life a perspective that you never imagined. And I think it makes you a better person, too.
Yeah, how old are your children, Dan?
I've got the one. He's 14, I'm 54. So I was getting to that age of 40, and I thought, you know, the one thing I want to do is be a dad, and rang an ex-girlfriend. The next thing you know, 10 months later, there he was.
Well, congratulations, buddy, and, you know, good on you. And, yeah, look, I think there's a, you know, it's a magical mystery tour in 100 different ways, but it grounds you. It makes you realize you're not the center of the universe.
Yeah.
Never were anyway in the first place, but it's also about the future. And, you know, one of our sayings on the Dads for Kids website, if you want to Google it, dadsforkids.org.au, the numeral 4 in the middle, it's about our future is our children, and that's the reality. And we've got a society that's becoming very anti-child, very, very negative particularly towards men, and, of course, fathers. They're the worst thing on the earth. And that's really bad because, you know, fathers defend mothers, and mothers need fathers, and fathers need mothers, and we need families. And we're sort of shooting ourselves in the foot in 100 different ways, aren't we, bro?
No, we certainly are. See, I mean, sometimes you hear these things about broken families and how the kids don't turn out that well. But the thing is, if you've got two great parents, even if they're not together, the kids tend to turn out very well. It's these families where the father just takes off and leaves the kid to go and do whatever, where the kid may necessarily not turn out as well statistically as they would have. But I would suggest that those individuals who do bail on their kids, they're the ones who suffer the most because they've missed out on something that is just so wonderful.
Yeah, look, I think that they miss out. Oftentimes they don't realise it till later in life, and that's also sad in itself. But I do think that the heartbreak of the children is actually greater still. That's my observation. And I've talked to a lot of different people. I've talked to obviously a lot of dads, and a lot of single dads come to us thinking that we're going to solve their problems. And of course, I wish we could, but hey, it's so complicated. And the family law court is in a situation now where it's just horrific for men.
Yeah.
You don't want to go in there in a million years if you can avoid it. And it's going to get a lot worse. I don't know how much you know, but the Labor government's just brought in legislation which is going to basically, you know, it's already bad, but they're going to make it 10 times worse, which is that's a whole other issue. And I don't think you want to go there today. But the bottom line is we certainly need to find ways to encourage dads, encourage families, encourage marriages. And, you know, and that's the best thing we do for our kids is to actually help people stay together, help people work out their situations and build for the future, because our children are our future.
Mate, they certainly are. When it comes to the family court, some of the horror stories that you can imagine that I've heard in 12 years of talkback radio will just make your hair stand on end and bring a tear to the eye. And if you have time, maybe next week or the week after, I'd love to talk to you at length about that, because it's something we haven't spoke about yet on this program, and I think it's something that really needs a light shone on it.
Yeah, look, I'd be happy to come back on and talk a bit more. I guess you wanted to talk more about the whole issue of the vaccine injuries, et cetera, mandates, correct? Is that wrong or right?
Mate, well, it's one of the things that we could have spoken about, unfortunately, on the segments here, because we've got so many guests, they're rather finite. So what we can do, we can certainly talk about that next time, but what we're going to basically focus on this interview is the fact that you are running Dads for Kids, that they can get onto the website and check it out. And I would suggest that every dad out there needs to go and do that. Even the mums, I think, could learn something by getting on the website. And if you could tell them what that website is again, that would be terrific.
Yeah, look, Dads for Kids, www.dads4kids.org.au. You've just Googled Dads for Kids with a four in the middle, you'll find it. It's pretty easy to find. Just you mentioned about mothers. So it's interesting because we've got a whole section on that website just for mothers. And we get men saying, oh, why you got mothers on there? This should be about men. And it's like you can't please everybody, can you? But like I'm passionate to support mothers too, because like they don't get the kudos they need, they don't get the support that they need. And so if we don't, as men and as fathers, support and honour the mother of our children, what is going to happen? The whole sort of feminazi deal is just rampaging across women. Women are feeling, you know, just getting smashed because they want to have kids, so they want to stay home. You've seen that Tradwise deal that's happening now, especially on TikTok. I mean, I find that quite amusing and it's sort of encouraging too, because it just shows you there's a lot of women out there that really want to be a mother, that really want to be a wife, that really want us to look after their family and put a priority on their kids and on their husband and on their future. And so, I mean, that gives me great encouragement. But just jumping back to mothers, yes, we've got a section in there, and it is about for mothers. And look, we've got a weekly newsletter that goes out every week to encourage dads. And I know a lot of men are alive today because they just keep getting that drip feed once a week to encourage them as a father, whether they're a single father or a grandfather or any sort of father. But it's so, so important to encourage men. And we're also all across International Men's Day with the main digital sort of global sort of influences in that, running that .com site. So we're passionate for men, passionate for fathers, passionate for families, and it's great to talk to someone that is so passionate as yourself.
It's great to talk to somebody who's got some common sense, who supports everything that is correct and right and real in the world, because unfortunately men of late have been painted as being toxic, as being misogynistic, and it's certainly not the case with almost anybody who is male that is in my particular life.
100%. I mean, I just went to the shop to get some shaving cream and I looked at Gillette and I thought, no, Warwick, you're never, ever going to buy a Gillette product. I don't know if you saw that. Remember that?
Yeah, that, 100%.
As they did,
yes,
about 4 years ago?
Yes. It's one of those Bud Light products that we need to, people, honestly, you know, whether it's the Coon cheese that, you know, they changed the name to Cheer and they made it racist when it wasn't, so I don't buy that anymore. I'm not going to buy a Gillette product. In fact, I just bought a terrific razor, an old school razor that uses the blades that are the generic blades, and it comes with probably a lifetime supply. So I think that's something we need to do to switch away actively from companies like Gillette that support these woke agendas.
Look, I couldn't agree with you more. Not that I'm a big beer drinker, but you know, if I was a beer drinker, I'd never drink Bud Light again. And I agree with
if you were a beer drinker, you wouldn't have drunk Bud Light in the first place. It tastes like wee-wee. Yeah, wee-wee. I call it, yes. Wee-wee.
So certainly, I appreciate you telling me that. But yeah, look, we have to, if we're going to make a change in society, we have to sort of mark those that want to destroy us, destroy our families, destroy our children. And we have to say, listen, guys, if you want to do that, we're never, ever going to buy for you again. And I've never forgotten the Gillette ad. It was just horrific that the men are buying the razors. Women aren't buying razors. Probably a few of them are, but then they charge twice as much for the women's razors. But the bottom line is their core constituency, they insulted with this wretched video that was basically set up by someone who just hated men, a radical feminist who just hated men. And as you said, it was all about knocking men and just demeaning them and destroying them. And look, yes, some men are bad, some men aren't good, but you don't destroy all men because of some men. You don't destroy all women because some women are stupid. You know, you say, look, you look for the better, you look for the good. And, you know, it'd be like talking about toxic femininity. Who would think about that?
Hey, Warwick, I would love to talk to you at length, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks, but I'm looking at the clock and I really have to go. Mate, I could not thank you more, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon. Warwick Marsh.
All the best. God bless you.
Take care. You're listening to TNT Radio. We'll be back with Father Tony Percy right after the break.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
The super typhoon in the Pacific is being used as a climate change agenda tool. Now, we told you this thing was going to intensify rapidly, and it's not done intensifying yet, but it has backed off considerably today. It's likely no more than a Category 3 now, after peaking at a 5. The eye has become very ragged, and it's nowhere near being one of the strongest typhoons ever recorded in the Pacific. That honor goes to Typhoon Tip, which was way, way back in 1979 and had an 870 millibar pressure and sustained winds of 190. This storm is now at 940 millibars, sustained winds down to 120 miles an hour. As far as Guam, this is not the strongest storm to ever hit Guam. That was Typhoon Karen back in 1962. 155, gust to 170. So there's a lot of hullabaloo going on with this storm. Now, I expect it will re-intensify into a Category 5 in about 2 or 3 days, maybe 4. But then I don't think it ever hits land as anything stronger than a 1 or 2. Even if it tries to hit land, it may never do that because it may just recurve and eventually stay east of Japan. So we've been calling these things way in advance. And thank God TNT gives me the chance to do this. So at least the listeners can know the why before the what, before people who only use the weather for their agenda jump on their climate change train and try to convince people that it's because of what they think. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It is the only weather you've got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Do citizens make decisions based on evidence and reason? Or are they manipulated by behavioral economists applying nudge theory? In 1992, the Rockefeller-controlled Russell Sage Foundation launched the Behavioral Economics Roundtable. In 2008, two members of the Round Table, Cass Sustain and Richard Thaler, co-authored the book Nudge, which led to widespread government adoption of nudge theory through the Behavioural Insights team. Also known as the Nudge Unit, launched in the United Kingdom, the Behavioural Insights team now has offices worldwide, including in Canada, Latin America, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and Singapore. The Nudge Unit boasts to have trained 20,000 civil servants and practitioners in behavioural insights. Supported by taxpayer funding, subtle messaging techniques nudge populations to normalise behaviours and attitudes deemed appropriate by nameless, faceless bureaucrats. The Nudge Unit plays on people's fears and guilt. It promises rewards for compliance in its projects, such as boosting vaccination rates and reducing energy consumption.
Today's news.
The sharing of biased and
false news has become all too common on social media.
Everyone else checking facts first.
Unfortunately, this is a real thing, and this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Free speech has a home
on TNT Radio.
And welcome back to the program. My next guest is Father Tony Percy. He has been a priest for 32 years. He's got an honours degree in finance and a doctorate in theology. He is the former Vicar General of the Archdiocese of Canberra and Goulburn and a former seminary rector and currently serves at St. Gregory's Parish in Queanbeyan. He's the author of a book, Australia, What Went Right, What Went Wrong, and he's also the leading man behind a petition in campaigning to stop the ACT government's compulsory acquisition of the Calvary Hospital. We're going to switch to him right now. G'day, Father Percy. How are you?
Very good, mate. Thanks for having me on your show.
Mate, thank you for doing what you're doing, because I just can't believe the government is going to renege. It was a long-term lease, I believe, over 100 years, if my memory serves me correctly, and they're cutting that immensely short and trying to take over. They're barely doing an adequate job of the one hospital that they have to look after, and here they are wanting another one.
Yeah, 120-year lease. The Little Sisters of the Poor came to Australia in 1885. 1979, the federal government, not ACT government, invited them to Canberra to supply an alternate hospital. I think the idea was to try and help public servants come out of Melbourne and Sydney as an encouragement to come to Canberra. So off they went on a 120-year lease. We're into 44 years of it, and the government's going to do a compulsory acquisition, and we'll come to that in a minute, compulsory acquisition of the land, the property, and rip up the medical service lease. So there you go. Lots under threat here. There's no doubt about it.
Now, is there an act of parliament that would prevent them from doing that, or have they somehow got around that or put it on hold? Yeah. It sounds like something they would do.
Well, see, what your listeners need to know is they introduced a bill on the 11th of May called the Infrastructure Enabling Bill 2023. And in that bill, it says two very important things and two frightening things. It says, look, the normal 2 month period, which was introduced by the Greens down here in Canberra. So we're, yep. I'm in New South Wales, just outside of Canberra. Queanbeyan's a country town. So they introduced in the ACT this idea that you have to have a 2 month discussion period where you look at a bill, people do some research, the inquiries, they come out with reports, and then you vote on it. So the government's, oh, no, we don't need to bother about that this time. We will compulsorily acquire the whole show on the 3rd of July 2023. So you can see the time frame is extremely quashed. In a democracy, this is very, very rare to do this sort of thing. And then secondly, there's ACT Land Acquisition Act 1994, which details how governments should do compulsory acquisitions. So we know the governments can do this, and for the common good, for different reasons. They've got to put roads somewhere, they've got to do this, they've got to put a hospital somewhere, they're going to, you know, acquire a showground or something to build a hospital. Okay, fair, we understand that. They can do this. But the reasons they've got to do it are on just terms. So you remember that film, The Castle, that very important film where they ended up in the High Court, because the whole question of, you know, you can do this, but it's got to be done on just terms. Well, so the government has said, no, our Land Acquisition Act does not apply in this case. So they're going ahead. They're going to compulsorily acquire the hospital, and then they say, then we'll do the whole thing on just terms. I mean, that's it. That means you've got one party that's in a very weak negotiating point. So this is really right against the rule of law in this country, which is the basis of one of the foundations of a free and fair society. So it's a real problem.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like a referendum that's coming up. Just vote a certain way and we'll tell you what's involved afterwards. I mean, they've obviously got no justification. If they did, they'd be putting that forward to you. There must be a bunch of outrage amongst the people down there.
Oh, yeah, people are not happy at all. We've got a petition going, www.savecalvary.com.au, and your listeners might just sign up. I think we're up to 28,000. The biggest petition we've ever had before that was 1,200. So it's just gone off the scale. And because, you know, they had such an incredible history and tradition of providing medical care and very, very good pastoral care as well to people that are in need with hospitals. So, and as you say, that the government is running a hospital called the Canberra Hospital, the main public hospital. It's a fiasco. It's a disaster. It provides the worst. They've done surveys on this, provide the worst care in all the states in Australia. So as to why they think they can run a second one, no one really knows. Well, what we're hoping to do, I think, is to get the Prime Minister involved here, because he's got to go to Barr and say, listen, pull your head in and come back to the table to at least do a proper compulsory acquisition. I mean, I can't imagine John Curtin or Ben Chifley or Bob Hawke or Paul Keating as Labor Prime Ministers operating with this sort of cavalier fashion.
No,
they'd be they'd be right out of the lodge on their bike, and they'd be protecting ordinary Australians. Because the reality is, if they can do it here with a medical institution, they can do it with any educational institution that they don't happen to agree with, and they can do it to anyone, any community group and any citizen. So there's a lot at stake here, and I think your listeners need to know this. This is a real attack on the foundations of Australian society.
It really is. I mean, I think they're literally ripping the soul out of that hospital. And if they go and take it over, it will never be the same. It will not feel the same. It won't be run as well. And it's just a shame that, as you said, you know, go back to the good old days of Ben Chifley, when common sense reigned and you pandered, if anything, to the majority, because that's what a politician did and that's what they relied on to be re-elected. These days, it seems to be the absolute opposite. We seem to be living in bizarro world where everything that possibly couldn't be right now is, or we're told it is. And I just can't help but think that this hospital is the one thing that we really should be focusing on at the moment. And what kind of feedback have you got from Anthony Albanese, or have you not reached out to him yet?
Well, we've reached out to him, all right, and that's in the process. So we need him to respond big time. Is he going to be known as the Prime Minister that protected ordinary Australians' property rights, or is he not? Is he going to be like an icon, like the Castle film, or is he not? So he's got to tell Barr, who's the chief minister here, his own Labor mate, to pull his head in and get back to the table. Otherwise, we are going to lose something incredible in Australia, our magnificent federation. See, what's to stop them from going to St Vincent's in Sydney, or the Martyr in Queensland, or the Mercy? What's to stop them to go through all these wonderful private schools and, you know, community schools we've got, which are very much part of the fabric of Australian society? What's to stop them from doing that if this gets through? So if people don't stand up and fight for this, then we'll be slipping down the slippery dip really, really quickly.
Yeah, it seems counterintuitive, a government that, you know, in fact, you know, previous governments going back, 20, 25 years have been hell-bent on selling things off and privatisation, and here they are wanting to do the exact opposite. So
it's a great point. See, Min's in Sydney, the newly elected Labor guy, so he's gone the opposite way. He said, look, the Catholics really know how to run cemeteries. So he said, let them run them, because they run them a lot better than we do. And you've got the Tasmanian government, and you've got the South Australian government negotiating with the Little Sisters of Little Company of Mary, which runs Calvary, saying, listen, we want you to come to our state to provide medical care. So they're actually, the other states are going the other way. So here we've got this real problem here in the ACT, and I bet you won't be long before it goes down to Victoria and perhaps even up to Queensland, because you've got governments there that have been in for a long time. And when you get governments in for a long time, they get pretty arrogant and sloppy and lazy and carefree. So we've got to fight.
Yeah, they certainly do. I mean, maybe I'm a little bit biased. You know, I have very fond memories of a particular Brother O'Connor at St Joseph's at Newtown in year six, in a school that had a proud history of more than 100 years. And there we were, the very last year to have gone through that school in 1979. And I drive past that building and I literally tear up. In fact, I'll get a bit emotional just talking about it. And every time we lose something like that, I think we're a little bit weaker as a society. We've lost a bit of unity. We've lost a bit of ourself. And let's pray literally that that does not happen to the Calvary Hospital.
Oh, I think so. Look, see, Albanese went to a Catholic school and we know his story, and he's always been quite strong on saying it's one of his great loves. And the other love, of course, is the Rabbitohs. Well, you just imagine if the New South Wales government was doing to the Rabbitohs what Barr here and the ACT government's doing to Calvary and the Catholic Church, he'd be right out of that lodge quick. So, yeah, there's a lot at stake. And I think the point you make there is very important. Australia's been a wonderful combination, mixture, a complementarity between public and private institutions. And it's very important that it plays out beautifully in health and in medicine. I mean, these are the two great professions, one looking after the needs of the body, one looking after the needs of the soul. And they're foundational to a proper, free, fair society. Our system of doing this is probably far superior than most democracies in the world, to be honest. And here we are saying, no, we don't want it. We don't want this rule of law applying. So anything you can do up there and get people roused would be really good. I think it would be sort of looking after your own backyard as well.
Well, Father Tony Percy, I very much appreciate you coming on here this afternoon. All of you listening, and if you don't want to lose another piece of old school Australia, a hospital with a soul, if you don't want to do that, then I implore you all to get onto the website, Save Calvary, SaveCalvary.com.au. Lend your name to the petition because we can't have this happen. Anthony Albanese, you need to wake up to yourself as a former Catholic, and I don't know if he's a current practicing Catholic, doesn't seem to be the case, but he needs to wake up to himself and do the right thing. You're listening to TNT Radio. We'll be back after the news. Stick around.